You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Hey, Matt Frank.
Yes, Chris.
I have a question for you that maybe you specifically can answer. What kind of beer do, you know, the giant monsters, the kaiju, drink?
I don't know, because, you know, beer is really sort of a human construct, and kaiju are sort of supposed to be, I mean, thematically, they're supposed to be above humanity and all that. There's not really any evidence to support.
Let me stop you right there.
All right, fine.
What kind of beer do people who like kaiju and giant monsters drink?
Oh, Circle Brewery.
Circle Brewery.
That stuff's great.
So you too.
Sure, hell yeah.
Oh, it's right here in Austin, Texas. Circle Brewery, they have their brew pub. You can go check out all their beers right there, and they are the official sponsor for OneOfUs.net.
Hell yeah.
You're drinking
The Hefeweizen is pretty good.
Yeah, the Circle Blur. It's my favorite, too.
Yeah, I actually just like, I don't even like beer, and I like these guys. It's nice. It's a nice flavor to it. It's good stuff.
Check out Circle Brewing, the official sponsor for OneOfUs.net, and come visit them at their brew pub in Austin, Texas. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. I must admit, Velvet Buzzsaw is a great name for a band.
It's a great name.
It really is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's a great name for a movie, too.
It is. It immediately grabs your attention. I was like, ooh, is this a horror movie that's set in the factory?
Yeah.
Although, I have to admit, the problem I had with it, though, is that every time I tried to talk to my wife about it or a family member about it, I kept calling it the different other Velvets that there are. You know, like, I called it Velvet Underground six times.
Not. Velvet Chainsaw. There's a lot of Velvets. There's a lot of Velvets out there. But we are reviewing this Netflix film because, quite frankly, we've just gotten to the point with the Netflix releases where this is on the same level as a theatrical release. It's huge stars, director.
I think for a lot of people, Netflix is the movie theater anyway. The notion that this didn't get a theatrical release doesn't matter to most people.
I don't think it does anymore, although this is a film that I think would have benefited by seeing in a theater, to some extent.
You think?
Yeah, it's very colorful.
Can we just get started? Can we just open up?
I would have been disappointed to see
spray some WD-40 on my 12-gauge here. I feel like it was very enjoyable, but it was enjoyable like Night Gallery. Like, the Twilight Zone is movie theater quality. Night Gallery was TV quality.
For all the people
who don't understand Rod Serling references, it had that made-for-TV horror movie with the kind of a Murder, She Wrote level cast of people. You know, like, we're going to squeeze a million people in this movie.
See, for me, I didn't get that. I got a very sort of, like, low-rent Robert Altman sort of thing, where
I'm in the middle of the both of you guys, because I think it's more like The Outer Limits. That's kind of like, it would have been fine if it was on either.
And what's odd is that I got Coen Brothers.
Did you?
You did?
I did. I actually spent like half the movie really upset that it was becoming a generic horror film, because I kept wanting it to be some fucked up Coen Brothers movie where everyone's trying to get the paintings and murdering each other off to get them. And so like half the time I was like, oh, this is cool. And the horror stuff's coming. Cool. I'll sit back for a moment.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I actually, and I'm speaking only of the non-horror stuff in here that I thought was very Altman-esque. It's a satire of like high art snob community stuff and like gallery owners and people who are art critics. And, it's not like, I'm sure it's way exaggerated to some extent, but that's in the same way that Altman would do his sort of like presentations of these community type things with a sort of like in The Player. It's like, obviously not everyone is quite this ridiculous, but there is a lot of truth to it too. But the horror movie stuff was just like Final Destination or something.
Oh, except like, well, okay, let me just say full disclosure. I am a complete art nerd.
You are
into fine arts. I follow ArtNet online. I read Artsy. I get notifications if artists I like release new editions or whatever. I'm a big art nerd from the 80s. And Art Web was clearly an allusion to ArtNet.
Sure.
And that's who Morph.
Morph Vandewalt.
Morph Vandewalt. Jake Gyllenhaal killing it in another perfectly modulated performance.
Well, and once again, like getting in the third act to where he's kind of freaking out and covered in sweat, which is like every Jake Gyllenhaal movie.
Although, can I say that? I never realized before how good Jake Gyllenhaal's ass actually is until this movie.
Because it gets
a close up like two or three times in one or two scenes.
I just think he's kind of like a perfect specimen, you know.
I mean, like, I guess there's a point. He's like, my sisters get naked like in every episode of The Deuce. Come on, what's holding me up? Here's the ass. Check it out.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
That's fine. I never even thought about that. He'd never done a quasi nude scene that I know.
He probably has. I just don't know. It didn't stick in my head the way it might.
He didn't do it. His characters did it.
He's going to do it in Spider-Man, probably.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Far From Home is actually rated an R for gratuitous ass shots.
For just Jake Gyllenhaal's ass, but only that. There's nothing else.
Well, Greg even had that in the writing, like, rated R because of Jake Gyllenhaal's ass.
As we said, he plays the oddly named Morph Vandewalt, who is a very snobby art critic, but one who everyone is really, quite frankly, terrified to piss off and would do about anything to get on his good side.
Yeah.
Especially this gallery owners in this, like Rene Russo is kind of the top of the heap gallery owner who they have, of any two characters in here get along the best, it's probably the two of them because there's kind of this mutual respect level going on there. It's like she always manages to get the great shows. He's always the guy who like kind of dictates the terms. Toni Collette is sort of like a mid-level...
She's abandoning the museum scene to be an art consultant for some wealthy buyers.
Right.
Which is a very realistic thing to have going on now because museums don't have any money.
True.
And the big flip here in real life is that art critics really don't carry much of a punch anymore. Nobody really cares.
True.
They sure don't drive $70,000 Audis and live in big, huge houses.
No, there's a lot of disconnect there.
Whole lot of difference between an art critic and a movie critic or a podcast critic.
I feel attacked, Johnny.
This movie is very heightened reality, for sure.
Yeah.
All these characters. And
it's a satire.
Like I said, it is very much a satire, but David Diggs has a fun little role in here. So like the up-and-coming underground artist who was part of a collective, but now is considering making the devil's deal to take the money. John Malkovich has a lovely bit in here and a great coda to the film.
Oh, yeah. That was really great.
He plays an artist who's been on the scene for a very, very long time, but now he's kind of feels like he just doesn't know what to do.
He's sober.
He's losing his juice
because he got sober.
And now he
doesn't everybody comments, which was a very Altman-ish thing.
Yeah.
Oh, he never should have stopped drinking. When they looked at his new paintings, and I'm like, I get that. I understand. I haven't painted since I got sober.
Zowie Ashton, who you've probably seen in a bunch of like British television type show stuff lately.
She was in the Walkabout show with Toni Collette. She was also in Nocturnal Animals, which is the right way to look at the art world in cinema.
I'm not sure I agree, but I did not care for that movie myself.
I love that movie.
I know you did. We're always going to disagree about Nocturnal Animals.
I was very confused.
But we'll always have Paris. So
I've never seen that movie.
Paris shut down. But she is a someone who works for galleries. She's like that seems like she might be the next one to make the step jump up to the next level. And she finds herself in this position because one of the neighbors in her building dies and she kind of overhears, just toss everything in the place. He said he wanted it all burned, totally destroyed.
And who was the guy?
What?
The Jeep Thrills guy.
Yeah.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
He never showed up again.
I was really disappointed.
Yeah,
right? I was like, Jeep Thrills guy, we were just talking about you.
I was so excited.
So she goes into his apartment. It's filled with paintings, and they're like the type of thing that, like, at least in terms of what the characters are telling us, that grab you and don't let you go.
Right.
Like, you're just like, who is this guy? And this is obviously...
They really oversold that, too, because, I mean, they look like... You had the commissioned illustrator for the studio knock out a suite of paintings in a weekend.
Well, if you've ever like Googled like haunted paintings, there's a bunch of like urban legends about haunted paintings, several of which have actually gotten to be quite famous. There's even a movie being made specifically about one of them.
That's what I was going to say.
Whenever you look at these quote haunted paintings, they have kind of this look. Right. You know, so it's clear they did their research.
There was a little bit of a Francis Bacon influence. Yeah. And then, but there was also a big Henry Darger, you know.
It was definitely based on that whole outsider artist thing as well, where it's like, that's happened a couple times where they find these guys who spent their whole life doing art and never told anyone about it. And then they die and they're like, whoa, look at this, all this crazy shit this guy did.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, we think we have enough things here. We can legally get past any problems that might pop up if any relatives or something appear.
I love that sequence a lot, though, because it's the lawyer's going, so you found it in the dumpster, right? He's like, well, not really. You found it in the dumpster.
But she's, Zoe Austin is the one who found him, so she's like, this is going to be big for me. This is going to make my career. And everyone who sees these things is instantly like, whoa, what the fuck? And
it
this
moves
is
me.
Changing everyone's lives in different ways who sees them. And at first you're like, this is still kind of this conventional kind of art thing. And it starts to, I think it does a really good job building dread for a while because you're like, okay, something's fucked up with these paintings, right? They start studying. It's like, this guy put his own blood into every single one of these, which is pretty creepy. But then
use a pen sideshow.
Kiss comic book 1978. That's all I'm saying.
But then it just kind of leads to, like I said, a kind of Final Destination-y type, a series of kills that are, don't make any sense in the context of the
plot. For one, nobody that got killed did anything wrong. It was like
dicks.
Anime logic, you
they're,
know?
They're
like,
dicks.
Well, it's the,
not
well,
really.
They didn't appreciate art the way it should have been. They exploited it.
Yeah, everyone who died, the only people who survived were the artists.
Jake Gyllenhaal was very sincere. He got very put upon when Toni Collette said, so why don't you give us a good review? And he was like, are you fucking kidding me?
And
you
know, yet he himself commits a sin against his
own
reason.
He does, but he's still, none of them are bad people.
Well, and the
none of them have done anything wrong.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think in general, with the exception of David Diggs, almost everyone in here is a mega prick of, like, hyper proportions.
I would have to say,
like,
I think they're
so up their own ass.
They're all
so
bad
are we. Do you not listen to our shows?
Not even close to the same. Not even close.
No, every single person that commits some kind of sin, like Aaron's saying, they're all usually probably terrible people. Like, even, except for like one person
Billy
who keeps getting fucked
didn't
over.
Didn't do anything wrong except he tried to steal the paint.
No, the only character in here who comes away as an actual innocent is Coco.
Yeah, I felt so bad.
I did.
Josephina starts out as someone here, like, oh, maybe she cares, but then she basically uses her power to trash her ex's career.
Yeah,
and it's that kind of stuff that is supposedly being punished. But the issue is that it's very amorphous. Like Chris said, it's this Final Destination-esque. We don't know what it is. We don't know. Like, there's nothing to stop. But they kind of hint at it being this crazy artist revenge ghost story throughout the middle of it. I would have rather seen that, or I would have rather seen the Coen Brothers movie that I thought it was going to be. But, I wanted a villain, and there was nothing there. It just kind of runs its course.
It was directionless, this evil. It was just kind of like, And for one thing, it's like, okay, so the paintings are possessed and they're evil, and yet the paintings themselves never actually do anything.
Yeah.
It like goes, oh, well, if there's any other art anywhere near the paintings, they're the things
I'm
that tell people.
I'm a taste maker.
I know. I'm just like, what?
It's like it infects the person, but I feel like I wanted these kills, but with better context. Give me something.
Well, he wasn't a cultist or anything. You know, there wasn't anything satanic in his paintings. They were just,
I mean,
kind of.
Well, here's what I got from what he was actually like. I guess this is spoilerish. I guess is that from what I gathered, the whole thing was that like this, everything he painted came from his experiences, but he just didn't want to share those experiences with anybody. Mm-hmm. So he was going to burn them all. And so now that these people have decided to show the world something he didn't want to be shown originally, he's just taking his revenge on the people who made that happen, is really what it is.
But they also kind of hint that maybe he was a serial killer, and maybe he put, like, pieces of his victims' bodies in the painting, too.
Well, I thought they were just saying it was just his tissue.
Oh, I thought...
They just say tissue in general.
When Jake Gyllenhaal was doing his investigation, it looked like they had found that there was kind of...
The guy that
maybe
he worked
he
with
killed a lot of other people.
No, the guy that he worked with killed one guy, and then he killed his father, and then spent 20 years in an asylum, and then got a job. And apparently, the guy he worked with, they said, found him in a field with his hands cut off, and it was like that was the end of that. You know, never like a ritual murder or a pentagram or anything.
Well, it's because Dan Gilroy is not, quite honestly, interested in horror films. And that's clear when you watch this. This film is actually, more than anything, similar to his previous Jake Gyllenhaal effort, the one where he plays the journalist Nightcrawler.
But there was nothing supernatural in
that. No, but they're both about art being destroyed by commerce. And that's what Dan Gilroy wants to talk about, and that's what this movie is about. Like, both films are like, yes, art is destroyed when you let commerce take it over. And I think that the horror stuff for him was just like, it was just a fulcrum point.
Honestly,
he doesn't really give a shit about the horror. And I think that's like one of the problems with the film, is that he doesn't take the horror even vaguely seriously, which would be fine because this is kind of a comedy on some level, except even then, he's not really putting hardly any thought into the kills or any of that. I was like, yeah, I almost wish he had just decided to leave that out entirely.
Well, and he doesn't really give a shit about the art either, mm-hmm. because the only real painting in the whole thing was the Lucian Freud at the end when he went to that appraiser's house, and he goes, and he says, oh, that's a Freud. I've never seen that one. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? If he was alive, that would be his profile pic.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's a hugely known self-portrait of many. I mean, Lucian Freud was a fucking crazy god on earth, you know, but there's just okay. And the reason I bring up Nocturnal Animals is because they had real art in Nocturnal Animals, mm-hmm. and there's something about and in Billions has a lot of real contemporary art.
I keep hearing that show is great.
Oh, it's fucking really great.
Yeah.
The thing about when you have real art in a scene, it's like there's an extra conversation going on. Mm-hmm. When you just have illustration that the prop department slapped up on the wall, all you have is a set decoration. And it's like, well, that doesn't really make me feel like I'm anywhere that has anything to do with the art world. And it's so trite. I really hate it.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of liked a lot of the art in the movie. Apparently I'm a trashy, horrible person.
I don't know. I just didn't think twice about it. But maybe it's because I don't spend as much time paying attention to modern art. It's just not a big thing for me. I mean, I like it. I like going to museums, but I don't know a lot about it. So I was like, it never would have occurred to me to notice that.
Well, my issue...
That's not real art.
Yeah, my issue with...
it is art. It's just not famous art.
Yeah. I agree with Johnny a lot, actually, when it comes to the fact that, yeah, it's not really real art in general. It's just like for one, the hobo man is just... is a dude pretending to be like a cyborg or some shit. And the other one is a sphere with just a bunch of fucking holes in it.
Yeah.
Those are the only like originalish kind of things like about it.
European recycling, glass but recycling.
It's the kind of thing you make fun of though when you see art kind of
but
thing.
But even the characters make fun of it. They're like, the part of it
He walked in and he was just, he made fun of the hobo man.
He also made fun of
the And he burned it to the ground when he said, homeless woman 4 years ago. It's just like, that's how an art critic is.
But they're the only things that show up.
They go, oh, what is this carnival attraction doing in a museum? And it's like, yeah, they totally shit all over those things.
Yeah, but they're the only, like original things they show. Everything else is, like you said, just like random, like something a kindergartner probably made. And they said they're haunted.
And that's like, you know, shitting on something that you made yourself to shit on.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, there's not, it wasn't modeled on any actual artists or.
Sure.
I thought the sphere to me was something a prop designer came up with as a, hey, we're going to use this as a murder weapon at some point in the movie, obviously.
Totally.
And then let's just talk about it as it was an art piece. And as a murder weapon, like, that was probably my favorite kill.
It's also probably the funniest part in the entire
very
fucking
funniest. Movie. The whole, with but the like, super stone
as an
cold
art
narration.
Piece, that and Hobo Man are both just eye-rollingly obviously on the nose bad.
The moment you see the, both these pieces and know you're watching a horror film, you're like, uh-huh. The only one that surprised me, I feel like there's got to be a deleted scene, because there's a sequence in one of the museums where there's this piece where it's all these wax figures of people in their house on like just an average day watching TV, but they're clearly played by actual actors who are sitting there. And I was like, oh, that's definitely going to come into play. And it never appears again. And I was like, why would you create that elaborate red herring and never use it? It doesn't serve a purpose to be a
red herring. Wasn't that in the other scene? Wasn't that how that started?
No,
that was all
a different place altogether.
It was kind of a visual reference to something that was similar to it.
Okay.
But it was very much different. And they spent like 10 minutes in that house.
Yeah.
It's a couple of scenes.
Yeah, that's right.
They're there for a little bit. But
I mean, just going on to final thoughts here, and I'll start this one off. I think there's a lot of fun to be had in this, regardless. I don't think this is a bad movie, although we've been very critical of some things about it. Certainly me as a big horror movie fan, kind of wanted the horror to be better than it was. But I got to be honest, this is still really fun to watch. Partially because, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal is just chewing up all the scenery as his super pretentious art critic. I just love the way he talks. The guy, talks like he consults a thesaurus. Morris every morning and decides which five words no one else in the world knows he's going to drop in casual conversation.
It's the mannerisms mixed with that, though, that I think really does sells it. Everything he does, like the little twirls he does.
He felt like a real person.
Out of everyone.
He didn't feel sticky in any way. He just felt like a real character.
But, like, everyone in here is giving it their all, I thought, on the whole. And it's a very funny script. There's a lot of lines that actually made me laugh. Yeah. I was like, that was really clever. It just never completely comes together with his mission statement. I feel like I said, the horror movie feels like it's just out of left field and it never really merges. And it feels like there definitely would have been a better way to do this. But what are you going to do? I still give it a 7 out of 10. Disarmingly funny Tony Collette sequences. Johnny Neal?
Okay. My thing is, I found it very enjoyable to watch. No matter how much I shit on it, I found it very enjoyable to watch. Even in a bitchy way of going, that's not how things work. Sometimes you enjoy knowing that you're right and they're not.
Sure.
The disappointment level comes from how great Nightcrawlers was, or Nightcrawler?
Nightcrawler, yeah.
Nightcrawler.
Which I think is a flat-out masterpiece.
I think it's a masterpiece. It was my favorite movie the year it came out. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal should have won every possible award. They should have just minted a medal and given it to him.
They should have just created a new award just called
The Bill Paxton Award. Yeah. Just to have, because Bill Paxton's small part was one of his great, when he called him a twerp, it was like, I know that guy. I used to work for that guy. But I don't think that I think that he really skewered how news is gathered and presented in place of actual news, and I thought that was very ripe for that kind of a skewering. I don't think the art world is really ripe for skewering from the outside, because nobody really gets it unless you're on the inside. Sure. And I will say that nobody really gets it. It's all falsely elevated and all that stuff, falsely inflated. So I just feel like he didn't really even have a grip on what he was trying to do. And you brought up Altman. Yeah, there's a lot of big people in this, but they only act in pairs. Like, Toni Collette never corresponded or interfaced with anybody but Jake Gyllenhaal. Jake Gyllenhaal was the one common denominator in the scenes. All of that said, I really enjoyed it. The art was shitty. The horror was shitty. But the script had a lot of good, really, really good pops. I'm going to give it 6 one-legged android hobos. There you go.
Michael?
The thing is, as much as it sounds like I don't like this movie, I actually really like this movie, like, from the beginning to the end. Like, everybody is doing really well. Jake Gyllenhaal, every single mannerism he does, it, like, the accent he's using with it, like, he plays a very effeminate character who's just trying to get through all this crazy shit, and some of the other actors, you know, they're pretty good. Some of them sort of just disappear. Like, John Malkovich just sort of disappears in the middle of the movie, but, like, not in a dying kind of way. Just sort of just, hey, go somewhere, and then you never see him again until the end. Kind of, and even then, I don't know, sorry. But the thing is, like, the story works really well, in my opinion, because without all the horror stuff, it would still play out in a specific way, in a Coen brothery kind of way, as Aaron was saying, because the horror just feels like it was added in the middle of it, almost, for certain parts of it, because there's so many betrayals and stuff that everybody's just doing to each other anyways, that if the paintings weren't going to kill anybody, they were going to kill each other, probably.
Right.
And then, but by the time it's done, like, I wasn't really sure, like, I kind of got what the movie was trying to tell me, but at the same time, it didn't know how to tell it. I felt like one character just sort of gets fucked over and over and over, over and over again because of a reason, for reasons, I guess. And certain characters just sort of make it out because they understand certain things.
Right.
And some people just make terrible fucking decisions. Or at least one person makes one terrible fucking decision. But I thought it was creative with some of the kills, at least. Which, like, from a horror standpoint, especially the last kill, I think, was creative enough, in my opinion. But overall, I enjoyed it. It's on Netflix. You know, you're only paying your subscription fee to watch it.
Which is steadily getting more and more expensive.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff on there, and I think it's worth a watch. I personally would give it 7.6 out of 10 times they looked at art and they looked at something that they thought was art, but wasn't art.
Man, 7.6, you're getting super precise at this point.
Yeah,
it had to be.
Looks like over and under going.
He's kind of like dividing it up into a 2,000 point scale.
The rubric. We got Mike's rubric going.
I had too much water. IGN.
So, yeah, I'm probably going to echo a lot of what's already been said. I'm of two minds of this movie. You can tell that. To me, Dan Gilroy had a great, amazing script for a movie that skewered the art world and then went, shit, I can't get the money for this, so I'm going to turn it into a horror movie and sell it to Netflix. Because you do have the bones of this really amazing Coen Brothers-esque dark thriller where everyone's offing each other and it's funny, and the character who did it at the end is the weird, quirky sidekick character who gets being bounced between the whole movie and you never think it. But instead, it just throws this random supernatural bit in that is never really explained, doesn't really have a point, and it's just there to kill people. And that ends up taking any attack on the art community that exists in this movie out of it completely and turns it into just a generic horror movie for me. Having said that, it's a generic horror movie with one of the best casts I've ever seen. I think it has more Academy Award winning and nominated actors than any other one before. And they all do a great job. And so everything that's not the supernatural bits is really fun to watch with really interesting, horrible people just doing a great job acting. And then you get some fun kills that make no real sense in the context of the story. I definitely recommend checking it out. As we've said, it's on Netflix and it's fun. Watch it with a few beers and you'll have a good time. Just don't try to make sense of it. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10. Twist tattoos.
So here's a funny bit of trivia that I read when I was researching about this movie. Because it's one of those things, it makes you want to know more about what Dan Gilroy was, what he was trying to get across.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what exactly was your goal here? And it turns out he had written the script for Superman Lives along with some other people. The one, the Tim Burton one that never happened with Nicolas Cage that we've all seen the pictures. And apparently it was kind of devastating to him that it never got made. He said, I put a lot of heart and soul in there, and it was all because of money. And Warner Brothers said, no, this costs too much. Sorry. And this is like apparently his long gestating anger coming out about the fact that Warner Brothers would never pay for that movie that he spent so much time working on.
That makes even less sense.
They should have been paintings of Nicolas Cage. Real angry.
Why
Nicolas
not cast
Cage?
Nicolas Cage?
Or make it about comic books you found or something instead of paintings. Okay.
I don't know. It's movies? Like I said, art versus commerce is a big thing for Gilroy, and this is not as good a take on that as Nightcrawler was. But it sure is entertaining nonetheless.
It is really an entertaining movie. No matter how much you shit on it.
That'll be the tagline we'll give the studio. There, you can put that on the video cassette case.